is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate upcoming on FanDuel. I'm your host, Sean Kane, and we are jumping into a big old 14-game slate here on FanDuel, upcoming on Friday night, the Thursday night slate. You know, going well. Washington lit it up. The Washington stack was excellent. Really pleased with that. The Houston stack came to life at the end there. A couple runs, not a ton of scoring, definitely no home run upside, but came to life. I wish I had been more committed to the Marlins lefties because just, you know, they just crushed. Derek Dietrich and, you know, all of those lefties basically just smoked. Smoked. What's his name? The Pirates pitcher. So, you know, an interesting slate to say the least. And Joe Ross twirled a gem. 65 fantasy points. Wild. Yankees got to David Price. That was kind of what I thought might happen. I was not really in love with the Yankees. And the Red Sox offense continues to just be totally flat. Could not do a blessed thing against Michael Pineda. So certainly an interesting slate. Waiting on to see once we get some results, get some bats going in this Minnesota-Seattle game. I got a lot of shares. Come on, man. Let's do some work here, Minnesota-Seattle. These offenses are kind of letting me down right now. But anyway, we got 14 games, so I'm not going to waste any time. Josh Fernandez is on here with me to break down the Friday slate. Let's jump into the spreads and figure out what we got. All right, starts in Pittsburgh. The Miami-Pittsburgh series continues. 9.5 runs projected as Vance Worley will go up against Tyler Glasnow. Pittsburgh is a small favorite here, and it makes good sense. This is not a great situation for either pitcher, considering that we've got 9.5 runs projected in PNC Park. That tells you a lot. So we'll talk a little bit about the Pirates against Worley in this spot. Rangers Nationals, 9 runs projected here as Andrew Cashner goes up against Tanner Roark. We didn't even talk about the Nationals because there were so many other great spots on this slate. But obviously the Nationals are in play against Andrew Cashner. Andrew Cashner finally let his advanced statistics catch up with him the other day. In his last start, he got shelled. I believe it was by the Red Sox. No, it was by Houston. Of course it was by Houston. He got beat up by Houston and Boston. So, you know, he finally started to give up some hits. Not a lot of homers, and his barrel data is pretty solid, but he will get hit, and he will give up walks. So the Nats are definitely in play, and the Nats stack is definitely in play. Oakland, Tampa Bay, 8.5 runs projected here. Andrew Triggs and Alex Cobb. And Alex Cobb is the favorite in this situation over Triggs. You know, Triggs up and down, to say the least, not been great. And, you know, you got to love the Rays, hard contact against a righty like Triggs in this situation. White Sox, Indians. 8 runs projected here. Corey Kluber might be the heaviest favorite on the slate in this one. Indians going up against Miguel Gonzalez, and they are projected below 3 runs. That is a massive red flag for the White Sox offense and a massive indicator of how much success Corey Kluber can have tomorrow night, and I totally agree with them. Kluber is easily the best pitcher on the slate. Tigers, Red Sox, 10 runs projected here as Jordan Zimmermann will go up against Brian Johnson. 5.5 runs projected for the Red Sox in this one because Zimmermann is a barreling gas can. He is just a barrel of gasoline. Like, he just gets barreled. So many barrels. So 10 runs here in Boston. Maybe this is what the Boston bats need to get out of their funk. Mets, Braves, 9.5 runs projected here as Matt Harvey goes up against Julio Teheran. And this is almost a pick 'em because these two pitchers both suck and they have very similar profiles. And both of these teams are flirting with 5 runs. So this is going to be a really interesting game to stack for sure. Have interest in both of these offenses. Baltimore, New York, 9 runs projected in this one. Dylan Bundy versus Jordan Montgomery, and Montgomery is the favorite here in this one. Just by a hair, but I think Montgomery's in a good spot considering how the Baltimore offense has been struggling recently. Definitely an interesting position for Montgomery. I mean, I guess, you know, the righties are certainly better than the lefties here in Baltimore right now, as evidenced by Joe Ross's start there. But certainly an interesting spot for Montgomery. He's been good. Angels are going down to Houston. 8.5 runs projected here. And Brad Precock will go up against Matt Shoemaker. And it's certainly a spot where we can attack Shoemaker. You guys know that I think Shoemaker is kind of a gas can, and I think his barrel stuff is going to catch up with him sooner or later. And Houston certainly could be the team to get to him tomorrow night at home. And Brad Precock, actually, Fern will talk about him. He's in an interesting position here. 8.5 runs projected in St. Louis as Jeremy Hellickson will go up against Michael Wacha, and Michael Wacha is a heavy favorite here, as Hellickson really just doesn't have good stuff. So we could stack St. Louis in this spot, but there's just so many other spots. Like this one, for example, Milwaukee, Arizona, and Chase Field. 9.5 runs projected as Zach Davies will go up against Randall Delgado, another team with 5 implied total runs. The Diamondbacks here against Zach Davies, they could just destroy him. They could absolutely destroy him in this position. Cincinnati is going to L.A. for the weekend, and they have 8.5 runs projected as Amir Garrett goes up against Rich Hill. And the Dodgers own about 5 of those runs right now as far as this line goes. Rich Hill is a pretty heavy favorite, -187. Interestingly enough, Dodgers are hitting lefties. I know a lot of times we basically say, oh, no, they're not hitting lefties. Well, they are. They're hitting lefties. Kansas City, San Diego, 8 runs projected here as Julius Chacin goes up against Eric Skoglund. This is an interesting spot for both pitchers, given the ballpark and the poor offenses, to be completely honest with you. Like, don't expect these offenses to just wake up. And Vegas likes Chacin. I don't mind Skoglund, to be honest with you, but Chacin had a couple rough outings recently. But he has had some real gems, and against a team, like Kansas City that just struggles, really just struggles in general. You could certainly see Chacin getting knocked around a little bit in this one, getting a nice start in this one. Toronto is going to Seattle. 8.5 runs projected here as Joseph Biagini goes up against Sam Gaviglio. This is a pick'em, and it's a pick'em because they don't trust Biagini, but Gaviglio is actually kind of, he just gives up too many walks. There's too many walks in that in Gaviglio's portfolio right now. Twins Giants, that's the last game of the night. Irvin Santana and Matt Moore. Giants are favored, which is very strange in this spot. That line is going to move. Sharps are going to hammer that one and go after go after Matt Moore, but he is better at home. So interesting spot. That is one of the lower totals on the slate, though, for sure. That's for sure. All right, guys, that is it. 13 games, like I mentioned, and let's jump into the player breakdown with my man Josh Fernandez. Who do you love? All right. Let's jump into the player breakdown, and of course, Thursday night, Friday slate, I got my man Josh Fernandez, the one and the only, the professor. Fern, how we doing, man? You must be ready for summer break here.
First of all, good evening, Sean. It's always a pleasure. Yeah, man, I'm ready. I got I'm taking off of work tomorrow because we had a hot water heater on the Fritz and had to replace it. So I got to take that big old thing to the dump tomorrow and clean up some nasty basement nastiness. But yeah, one more week. So I get a 3-day weekend, one more week, and I'm done, dude. And it's going to be kids, beach, and MLB DFS, and that's I'm super excited.
Damn, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. Yeah, man, I don't know what it is about this time of year, but basement problems. I got basement problems
too. I know, man. I got basement problems, and now I got, well, my ant problem was last month. The springtime.
I got ants like you wouldn't fucking believe. My whole house smells like Raid.
Dude, I placed ant traps everywhere. And then in the wintertime, it's the mouse traps. So between the ants and the mice and the water heater, and then, Sean, and then the freaking Astros getting shut out. Well, not shut out. One run. Yeah, by Jason. Who scored the run, by the way? Was it
I don't know. It must have been, you know.
It must have been like Nori Aoki or some asshole. Yeah,
seriously.
I don't even have it in front of me.
I don't know,
right,
man. They're tilting me as well right now. They are you know, this is the second 5+ total that I misread. Frustrating for sure. I mean, tomorrow, that, you know, if the follows the law of averages, they'll come back tomorrow and put up, you know, 10 runs. That's just kind of how DFS goes.
Yeah, buddy. Hey, before we start, can we talk about Scooter Gennett for like a minute?
Fire it up, dude. I'm all in on Scooter Gennett.
Dude, I gotta say, okay, so like this past week, I've really been trying to incorporate pitch data into my research. For those of you that follow me on Twitter, you are aware of that because I'm spamming the shit out of your Twitter feed with my like my noticings. And yeah, Scooter Gennett, man, like when I saw that he excelled against the sinker and the cutter.
Yeah,
I was like, interesting. Maybe I'll get me a lucky double or homer or something for Min Sal tonight. So I just want to clarify, because I've been getting some props over the last couple of days from people, and I just want to clarify, like, I am not by any means saying that I predicted one homer, much less five. That'd be crazy. Four homers. I'm right. Just saying that when it comes to looking at batters, and pitchers too, it really pays to like peel back the onion a little bit more and not just look at like lefty righty matchups or home away splits. You should also look at what the repertoire is. I mean, case in point, and then I'll hear what you have to say about it, Sean, is, I mean, like last night, I feel like it was you or someone else tweeted about Brian McCann. Brian McCann crushes the changeup, and you know, he hit a changeup out of the ballpark. I mean, so if you're not looking at pitch data, you definitely got to do it, because it really, really opens up your eyes quite a bit.
It really does, and it's really interesting. So I mean, so for people to, you know, get a sense of what we're talking about, it's on FanGraphs, you know, and we're gonna reference it. And it's kind of hard to read, but once you figure it out, you can start to begin to understand how to compare guys. I think one of the good starting places is the new RotoGrinders Plate IQ tool. And that's a pretty easy way. I think your way is more comprehensively clear about how effective the pitcher's pitch is and how effective the batter is at hitting it. Because what FanGraphs measures is, you know, how above or below average that the player is in the, against that pitch, or that pitcher's quality of that pitch is. Whereas RotoGrinders will measure a hitter's success rate against a certain pitch and how often that pitcher throws that pitch. So that's a really good place to start. That Plate IQ tool is very, very cool, and it's a pretty easy one to use. You know, and so basically, you know, that's how I got to Yu Darvish last night, because I think, you know, you worry about the lefties, and I was like, well, I'm not going to stack the Mets here, because Darvish is basically just sliders and cutters, and And the only person who can even get close on a slider, sniff a slider, is Jay Bruce. And Jay Bruce smacked double dong, but he was it. He was the entire offense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cabrera, Conforto, and Duda are all changeup hitters, and they mash the changeup. Like, good luck if you're a fucking changeup pitcher. But it, you know, you can use it for pitchers as well to try to understand how much of an advantage do they have here based on their pitch style and their pitch type.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah. I love what I'm seeing so far from pitch IQ. Yes.
Plate IQ.
And it's free yeah. too. But yeah, I think one of these days, not this weekend because I'm going out of town for a wedding. Unfortunately, I can't. Unfortunately, I have to go party at a wedding. Darn. Yep. I can't sit on my computer and play with Excel all weekend like a huge, awesome, cool guy. But I promise you guys I'll make a video kind of walking you through how I make my spreadsheet. And I don't know, should I post it on the Patreon page for $10 subscribers or should I open it to the public? I'm not sure.
I don't know. I mean, I think you get some different responses and answers. I think, you know, we can talk about that off the air.
Yeah, but I promise you guys that I'll put something out there soon.
No, it's worth looking into and reading. And I, you know, the Plate IQ is the easiest place to start.
Oh, it's a piece
really.
Of cake.
It's really nice. It's really easy to use. And shout out, you know, Roto Grinders, man, they create good tools. And they really do. And if you learn how to use those tools, man, you can really, really figure some stuff out. And you don't have to do the premium package that they have. Their free stuff is worth it. So, mm-hmm. All right. Speaking of, you know, tools here, research, we got a lot to talk about. 14 games. The Cubs game is in the afternoon. You know, and the arms are really interesting, Fern. I feel like there's not a pitcher really worth paying for. And well, there's one pitcher worth paying for. And then there's a ton of options in this 8K and 7K range that are actually pretty appealing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are going to go through, Sean, definitely a bunch of like interesting little arms.
Yeah.
I mean, but as far as your cash games, there's only one guy that you can really hang your hat on. And feel good about it. And so, you know, enlighten us about this special guy, Corey Kluber.
Corey Kluber, back from the DL, you know, and we agreed. We were talking about it before the show and was like, there's really no one else. Like, Irvin Santana's up there at 9-2. And while Santana's had some excellent starts and really shown some pretty amazing stuff recently, I just don't necessarily feel the need to pay for Santana. You know, I pay for Santana, given the fact that Corey Kluber is right there against the Chicago White Sox. Okay, so we have a righty against the White Sox already. First Bex checked, matchup clutch. And then you get a guy like Corey Kluber with a 28% K rate, 13.9% swinging strike rate, decent batted ball data. I mean, no one's hitting him, but, you know, 41% ground ball rate and a 41% hard contact rate. Okay, the fly balls aren't that bad. You know, he is likely to give up a dinger. He's got a 1.4 home run per nine, and that's kind of the thing, right? With some of these excellent arms, someone's going to get a hold of one ball, and he's going to send it, right? And that's what it is, and that's the case with Kluber. Okay, it's going to happen from time to time, but remember, this is the worst team in baseball against right-handed pitching. You know, even Jake Odorizzi is kind of spinning a gem. He's got like 8 Ks right now, I think. Even though he's given up some runs, they have gotten to him a couple runs here and there. But you know, Odorizzi has some reverse splits problems, whereas Kluber doesn't. In fact, his last outing against the White Sox, he pitched a 9-outing shutout against them with 9 Ks to match. You know the deal. White Sox can't hit anyone. They strike out plenty, and Kluber has just this filthy, filthy breaking stuff. Listen to this, Fern. In that game where he came back from the DL against Oakland, he had 10 Ks and only 6 innings pitched. That's ridiculous. Okay. He got pulled as soon as he was done in the sixth because they were watching his back. He had a 31% swinging strike rate against Oakland, and he only allowed a 35% contact rate. That's obscene. It's obscene that he was able to do that. All of his pitches are grading out above average or average. And that day against the White Sox in particular, actually, that game where he went nine innings, his sinker was especially hot at its most, a season's most effective. But, you know, this guy, I mean, this guy can deal, dude. And he has some filthy, filthy stuff. And I think it's a lock. I mean, it is the definition of lock, stock, chalk right here. So Kluber it is.
Yeah. And I really like his price too. You know, oftentimes, you know, when we see these can't miss studs, we got to pay, you know, in the mid 11s for them. And I think that this matchup, at 10-5, you know, you got to feel really good about that price. Like, I think it's right on the nose for, you know, what you want to be paying for a stud. And I think he's going to give us some, Sean, you know what he's going to give us? He's going to give us some Joe Ross versus the Baltimore Orioles kind of stuff. Cause I just looked and I started him, not to toot my own horn here, because it was like purely based on line movement and the fact that the Orioles suck balls right now. 65 points.
Good gracious.
12 strikeouts, dude.
So Joe Ross is also one of those guys who has one of his games in his FanDuel game log is a negative number. So good for you, Joe Ross.
What the fuck, man?
16. Wait, did you just say 16 strikeouts?
No, 65 points, 12 strikeouts.
Oh my God.
Yep. And here's the crazy thing. This particular line, excuse me, this particular line. Okay. Joe Ross has 65 points and my team has 83 points.
Oh my God, assholes.
I know. It's my Rays and Astros stack. Astros against Jason Hamill and my Rays against that son of a bitch, Derek Holland. So go figure.
Derek Holland.
Go fucking figure.
Yeah, I mean, it's.
But yeah, Corey Kluber, dude. Corey Kluber.
It's been one of those weeks, though, with bats. It's like you're on the right team and you can't find the homer.
It's either you're Scooter Jeanette or you're nobody.
Yeah. No, that's very true. Scooter. God.
Yeah.
All right. So if you're pivoting, we're going down in price. There's a couple really nice options here. Why don't you tell us about one of your nice options? Then I'll give mine. You actually wrote up two in this price tier. So,
yeah.
Tell us about your first one.
Yeah, I wrote up two just because Sean, we couldn't in good conscience offer anybody else in that tier. So I'm going to start with Michael Wacha at 7,300 against Philly. Michael Wacha is as boring as it gets. I mean, he's not a sexy pitcher. He's just a solid arm. Solid National League arm, taking on a below average offense. I mean, you look at his rates this year, you know, he's got the 24% K rate, which we like, the 10% swinging strike rate. You know, it's not elite, but it's good. It's very good. A good ground ball to fly ball ratio, low hard contact. So all those boxes are checked. Waka's issue is the walks. He's walking almost 10% of the batters he's facing this year, which, you know, that's pretty concerning. Fortunately for him, however, Philly is not a team that takes very many walks. To top it off, they don't hit a lot of homers either. And they, you know, I mean, they don't strike out a ton, but they are a team that you can strike out given the right pitcher in the right situation. So if you're trying to save money in cash games, you know, if you're trying to, cause Kluber, honestly, in 50-50s, like I could see Kluber going like 80% owned. And rightfully so. But if you want to save money in cash games and you really feel good about some higher price bats, then by all means, I think Michael Wacha is a fine play in this situation. You know, he should at least give us 30 to 35 points, given his recent performance and the weak opponent. And when I say at least 30 to 35 points, I'm saying as a floor. You know, he definitely has more upside than that. But like I said, to start off this little segment here, he is not the kind of pitcher that is going to blow you away.
Right.
So, you know, tread lightly, but keep in mind that he's a safe, fine play.
Here's the best news, okay? Those walks are all coming against lefties. The Phillies legitimately have two lefties that you are concerned about, Odubel Herrera and Michael Saunders, and that's it. All the damage is being done by the lefties. The XFIP and the Sierra go way down against righties. The strikeout rate goes up against right-handed bats. The walk rate goes way down against righties. And you add to that that on the opposite side, St. Louis is going to be seeing Jeremy Hellickson, who is actually, strangely enough, in the bottom 25 right now as far as barrel FIP goes. He's got a 5.4 barrel FIP and only a 10% strikeout rate. I mean, there's a possibility that we should be stacking St. Louis bats against Hellickson. So, yes, Waka can get into the sixth inning. Yes, Waka could get the quality start, the win, and avoid a lot of damage because there's not going to be any lefties here to hit him.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you know, and I think that that is something that's really important to look into is the overall splits of the opponent. You know, if you've got a situation where it's like heavily dominant on one side of the split, you know, that's something. I mean, it's time consuming, but it's worth looking into.
Sure.
You know, and on a large slate like this, I mean, you know, not all of us have the time, but for you to point that out, you know, guys, you got to keep that in mind. You know, Philly, you know, they're exploitable in this situation for sure.
They are. They're very exploitable. They're easily targetable in this spot. And so I think, you know, we look at Waka. I actually really like Jordan Montgomery. He is in a similar price range in that 7K range. He's getting Baltimore. You know, there's a reason that Joe Ross has 65 fucking fantasy points right now. It's because of his opponent. And Baltimore, you know, we expect them to be pretty decent, but the O's offense is not amazing right now. And against a lefty like Montgomery, they are striking out at a 25% rate. Montgomery owns a 23% K rate, 12% swinging strike rate. He's, you know, his walk rate is a little high at 9%. His XFIP and Sierra are a little high at 4.6 and 4.4, and he's gotten hit. He's gotten hit. What I really and he's given up some runs. Like, let's be clear. Like, he's a rookie. He, you know, what I think I like in this situation is the lack of hard contact. 22% to right-handed bats and 24% to lefties. You know, if you're going to get in trouble with the O's, it's because you're getting smacked around the park with hard contact and barrels. Those are very solid numbers. You know, and he has the opportunity to get some strikeouts here. He's pitched against them twice. All right. The issue is that he hasn't gone deeper than six innings in both of those games because they're keeping him on a pretty short leash. They're really not letting him face more than about 25 batters per game. So it's very clear that they have, you know, like keeping Jordan Montgomery injury free and very fresh in mind. You know, he gave up four runs across both starts, three in one and one in the other. And he got hit. I just think that the Baltimore offense right now is in a position. They're vulnerable. They're not hitting. You know, you can take the cost savings and hope for a little bit of upside with Montgomery and a little bit of leverage as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Orioles are just, and I've said it before on this podcast, you know, the Orioles are just one of those teams, kind of like you mentioned earlier about the Pirates. I think it was the Pirates and the Rays. I mean,
yeah.
These are teams that just completely fall off the map and then they explode and then they fall off the map. They're just so volatile. And so that is something, you know, that definitely plays well into this situation for sure. I'm going to offer to everybody a guy that I think is going to go very, very overlooked. And that's Tanner Roark. He's 8,600, which I don't know, man. Like, I look at that price and I cringe because,
yeah,
8,600 is a tough pill to swallow for Roark. And he's taken on Texas. And I know that Texas, you know, forever and always will have the name value, the Texas Rangers. They're the home run hitting Texas Rangers. They have that name value. But right now, Texas is scuffling a little bit. I just want to start by talking about them and then go on to Roark himself. But Texas, you know, they're among the worst teams in baseball over the last couple weeks in WRC+, WOBA, ISO, and OPS. So can they break out of this slump? Sure, any team can break out of a slump any day. It's impossible that a team stays in a slump forever. We all know that. But right now, Texas is scuffling. And not only in those, I guess, like overall team efficiency metrics, they're the third worst in baseball in K percentage and the worst in soft contact, meaning they have the highest soft contact rate in the span of time. So right now they are not scoring runs. They're not hitting the ball hard. They're not, hitting the ball out of the ballpark, obviously. And they're striking out a lot. So this is a team that you want to pick on. But like I said before, they've got that name value. And I still think that there's a contingency of players out there that does that people just don't. And I think you mentioned this on the pod the other day, Sean, is a lot of people look at time spans for DVP and NBA over like 5 and 10 game time spans.
Right.
Like, a lot of people are like glued to those, time frames. But in baseball, I think a lot of people neglect to look at, numerically how teams are doing over the last 7, 14, 30 days.
Yep.
And so you miss situations where, quote unquote, namey, like good, you know, offenses are really struggling. And that's Texas. So I love picking on them right now. And for Roark himself, he's not great anywhere. Like, if you look at his numbers, the K rate, the walk rate, the swinging strike rate, etc., like, nothing really pops. But he's fine. Like, he's not bad and he's not good. He just is.
Right.
He just is Tanner Roark.
Your number four starter.
Exactly. And so when you combine the fact that you just have a solid big league pitcher who's overpriced, taking on a name team that is struggling, you have insane ownership upside. I mean, ownership leverage. I mean, I could totally see with, you know, the cheap, interesting options coupled with Kluber, Roark going completely overlooked and going under 5% owned. And I just think in GPPs, it's worth a shot in a couple spots if you multi-enter.
I hear that. I like that call. I think if you want to spend down, we got a couple options too. I mean, and that's crazy to say. Like, there's a lot of guys down here. Like, I have some interest in Julius Chacin. I think he's in an interesting spot, but I also have interest in the opposite side in Eric Skoglund. And he's getting San Diego there. Kansas City is going out to San Diego for a series. And anytime you get San Diego in Petco, it's a great matchup play. It's a great situation. And you get him against the lefty, it's an even better situation because San Diego is bad against righties. But they are really bad against lefties. That's saying something. Skoglund has shown basically a tale of two sides. Like, he had one great start and then he had one brutal, 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 brutal start. Really didn't even make it out of the third inning. But his first start, he went six inning pitched. He had zero earned runs, one walk, and five strikeouts. He started against Cleveland, and that was the game where he didn't make it three. But apparently, like, it's, you know, that's kind of what you can expect from a guy coming from the bullpen and pitching, you know, a full start. It's kind of hit or miss, okay? But San Diego is a 25% K rate. They're batting 195 as a team. I know we don't look at batting average, but that's staggering. And the team as a whole has a 64 WRC plus in the last 30 days against left-handed pitching, okay? We say, you know, we just saw Robbie Ray dominate them in Chase Field. This game is in San Diego. Excellent pitcher's park. It's kind of a lateral move for Skoglund as far as ballpark from Kauffman to there, but, it works. There's not a ton of data on Skoglund, okay? There's what I like from what I see, though, is his AAA numbers match his big league numbers. The 21% K rate stays the same. The 10% swinging strike rate stays the same. The home run rate, the batted ball data, it all pretty much aligns, which to me says, you know, like, okay, he hasn't been overperforming in AAA and then, you know, is going to get to a point in the majors where he's going to get shelled. It seems like his stuff has been consistent. He's been fine. He should give you a serviceable start, and he's almost min price. There's sleepy upside in a pitcher that's on the road here, but I think that, you know, Skoglund could have a nice game for you.
Yeah, definitely. And that 64 WRC plus, just to give context to that, that is woefully bad. It's so bad, it's like unsustainably bad. It's like a batter hitting like 100 for the year bad. Like, you could see a guy hitting like 190, but to hit 100 is just like, no, that's not possible. That's six standard deviations below the mean. So what that means is, like, if you look at a bell curve, I mean, that is like on the tiniest little tip of the tail of the bell curve. Like, San Diego is not going to be this bad all year. They demonstrate that they're a competent team at times. The times are few and far in between. However, it's not sustainable, but they're just not good. So anyone is worth a consideration against them, especially when, as you mentioned, Sean, they're like near min price. You know, it's just worth the risk.
It is. You can, I mean, these are major league pitchers. This offense has been terrible, and these guys, they get going, they can really do some damage.
Yeah. So, my guy for my my dart throw is Brad Peacock.
What a great name.
I know, I love the name. And Brad Peacock goes way back with me because, you know, as a DC Baltimore guy, Marylander, I remember him on the Nationals, and he was not very good back in those days on the Nationals. He was a guy that seemed destined to be like a quad A, you know, getting called up, getting sit down kind of guy. And all of a sudden, like, something's gotten into him. Something's gotten into old Bad Brad.
Yeah,
and
baby.
Yeah, you like that? And so, so the Astros, he's on the Astros, by the way. They're taking, because I guarantee you, like, the vast majority of you didn't know who the hell he was playing for. So, Houston's taking on LA, the Angels. Okay, Brad Peacock's career numbers are like super blah. 4.33 ERA, 4.62 FIP, 4.47 XFIP. I mean, basically, he's like, I said, you know, he's a quad A pitcher. Like, every once in a while, he'll have like a nice stretch, but most of the time, he's going to be forgettable. This year, however, he is dominating. Okay. I will preface it by saying it's in 15 innings pitched. But here's the thing, even if it's in 15 innings pitched, when you have a 1.66 XFIP, a 12% swinging strike rate, 42% K percentage to 6.8% walk percentage. Like all of those rates that I just fired off for you right there, those are our uber ultra elite. And yes, they're going to regress negatively. However, even if they regress negatively in a somewhat significant way, they're still going to be really good. Okay. If you can get Brad Peacock at 3x FIP, even 3.5x FIP, that's very good. Okay. That's a 3x FIP is elite. A 3.5x FIP is very good. I mean, the 12% swinging strike rate means that he's on to something here. And he's inducing a lot of ground balls. He's throwing a lot of first pitch strikes. He's limiting hard contact. So the dude, I mean, I have to dig deeper. I'm sure there's some feature article by some Houston beat writer or some geek out there on like Fangraphs or whatever. No offense, Fangraphs people, I love you. But I guarantee you that something has changed with his repertoire or his approach or whatever. The bottom line is he is 7K, and I don't know if everybody's picked up on him quite yet. So those underlying stats are telling us to take notice. Go ahead.
I'm looking at the game logs. In two starts when he only pitched 4.5 innings, he had 8 Ks.
Yeah.
He is – the only thing that I can tell, Fern, once he went to starting, once he went to the starter role – and by the way, he pitched 3 games against Detroit, Minnesota, and Texas. Those offenses are not the Los Angeles Angels without Mike Trout. Now, obviously, we saw the Angels today – you know, oh, they got after Michael Fulmer, and they seem like, you know, okay, fine. CJ Cron and Cole Calhoun are heating up a little bit. Like there's some reason for hope in Los Angeles. But Peacock right now is dealing, dude. He really is. And it's the slider that he's really hammering. In those 3 starts, he threw the slider 40% of the time. And is leaving, you know, fewer fastballs on the table, and it seems to be working for him.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, when you look at his repertoire, he is primarily a fastball slider pitcher. And that's worrisome, like from an organizational standpoint or like as a hardcore fan of your team. Like you don't want your pitcher to be a fastball slider starting pitcher because that wears your arm, your ligaments out. That slider is like asking for Tommy John surgery, you know, but we're talking about a guy who's about to be 30 years old here. He's been in the league for quite some time. I mean, I don't even know if he's had Tommy John surgery. He probably has. It's like a rite of passage these days. But I mean, look, you said it, Sean, 42% of the time he's throwing the slider. I mean, that is a pitch that if it's on, like you can't hit him.
No, it's a K. That's your K pitch. And that's what I'm saying is if you're seeing these swinging strikes and these Ks, his slider must be filthy.
Yeah.
And you know, because that's what that is. It's a strikeout pitch and it must be working. And against teams that hit the ball hard, you know, Los Angeles's offense is not that. It's not nearly as scary. So no. I like that call a lot. I think, you know, Peacock, that's really, really interesting.
Yeah, and he throws a couple breaking balls, too. Like, he's got
he's got a curve in there and stuff.
Yeah, so, you know, if he's locating that breaking ball and the slider continues to bite and the fastball, he's locating the fastball, I mean, he could keep it up. You know, he could keep this torrid pace up and you know, he's going to regress at some point. But like you said, man, Los Angeles is no Minnesota Twins or Detroit Tigers.
No, this is true. Speaking of offenses, we got a couple really nice offensive options out here today. I mean, this is going to be – it's going to be hard, Fern, to really get yourself narrowed down to who you love. And that's
why I'm so happy that we have some intriguing cheap arms.
I know. It's going to be interesting. Yeah. I think the one offense that people are going to really gravitate towards, it's going to be very obvious, it's spendy, but it's also going to be very chalky, is the Red Sox. And with good reason. Sox are getting the Tigers this weekend. They're going to get Jordan Zimmermann. And Zimmermann is a top, or I guess the bottom, of what you would, the barrel FIP leaderboard, one of the worst barrel rates in MLB. He's third worst in Major League Baseball.
May as well be the worst.
Yeah, behind Hector Santiago and Matt Moore.
And Hector Santiago just got DL'd, or sent down or DL'd?
You got 10-day'd. He got 10-day'd, okay. Which was the, hey, buddy, let's watch some game film here.
Exactly.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and read a couple of binders and take a day off or two, because we can't keep up with you giving up 10 runs every time.
Yeah.
Zimmermann is allowing 7.2% of barreled balls, 14% K rate, and a walk rate of 7%. He just, like, he's not getting anyone out. He's getting hit really hard. He's allowing 40% hard contact, 45% fly balls, the 25% live drive rate. You look into the splits, it's pretty much everybody, to be honest with you. Lefties, righties, everyone getting to him at the same. He's an equal, he's spreading the love. So this is, you know, an easy opportunity to mix and match 1 through 6. The issue that you have with the Red Sox is that this offense has been pretty, pretty lackluster. You know, and just again tonight, Michael Pineda freaking throws a one-run gem against them in eight innings. This offense is ice cold. And so, you know, I'm buying, but I'm buying with hesitation. And I'm buying, the guy that I'm really buying is Mitch Moreland. He's one of the hottest guys on that team right now. So definitely Mitch Moreland. He's going to be in everything that I do, all Red Sox things that I do. And I don't mind Benintendi. He seemed like he got it going a little bit in the last week. He's been hitting the ball pretty well as a lefty. So I think Moreland and Benintendi are my starting places. And then I try to usually add whoever's in between them, whether it's Mookie, or Hanley. He's up at the top. Xander or Hanley. The problem is Xander really, he doesn't ever barrel the ball. So you're wasting a perfectly good opportunity with a terrible pitcher here against a guy who really doesn't barrel up. There's no power upside there. So it might be Hanley for me, maybe Jackie Bradley Jr. Cause he can actually get some velocity there, but his numbers this year are not very good. ISO below 200. I think maybe Hanley and Mitch and Benintendi, and that's kind of it. I don't want to waste this opportunity against Zimmermann on guys who can't go yard. And Mookie, obviously. Mookie can go yard. He just isn't – he's so damn expensive. I don't even know. You know, I mean, I like the Red Sox, but given the fact that on a Friday night slate with 15 teams, I got to ask, Fern, I mean, are you going to have Red Sox?
Dude, Sean – man, like, the Red Sox are really tilting for me because
I agree.
Every time I use them, I mean, I can't tell you. I can't honestly. I can think back to, like, you know, like shining moments this season where I've like, oh yeah, I remember when I used Kansas City mini stack when Jorge Bonifacio, like, blah blah blah. You know, I can pull that stuff out of my ass easy. I can't really tell you. I can't remember, like, a time where I was like, oh, hell yeah, I stacked Boston. You know, like, they are a good team, and they are extremely frustrating and boring in DFS. And it sucks because you know the skill that these guys have. You know the ability. And I do believe they're going to break out here soon as a team. But, man, I'll tell you right now, like, it's hard for me to buy in. That said, you know, if I'm, like, multi-entering, like, I love those 10 max or 20 max GPPs, the $2 price point where you can get a whole bunch of entries in there. You got to be crazy if you're not going to stack up Boston against Jordan Zimmermann. But if I'm like a 1-2-3 entry kind of guy, you know, it's going to give me pause because I don't know, but that might be my bias talking, and you or someone could talk me out of it.
No, I think the thing that I'm thinking is,
but do I do I like Mitch Moreland.
Mitch Moreland, but like I would go Moreland Benintendi, but that might be it. Like I like them. I just you get into one of those positions where you know the spot is so good that you don't want to be out in the cold.
Yeah, I mean you could do like Christian Vasquez or what's the other catcher? I can't remember.
Sandy Leon,
you know, like I always Sandy like, you know, on a really shitty pitcher, kind of just like tossing out like a catcher.
Yeah. You know? Right. No, I hear that. I hear that. So, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just like, do you want to stack them or do you want to stack the Blue Jays? Because I love the Blue Jays in this spot and you're going to talk about them.
Yes, sir, man. Sam Gaviglio. You know, Sammy Gaviglio. I remember him from Brooklyn when I was coming up in the Bronx back in 1957. He was a good kid. Sammy. Look, Sammy Gaviglio, pitch-to-contact guy, and we love pitch-to-contact guys because they tend to be very efficient pitchers. They don't go walking a ton of guys. And sometimes pitchers who walk a lot of guys can kind of like rain on your parade because they'll just walk your favorite hitter. And then some random dickhead will have like a crazy game. And it's like, seriously, come on. Sam Gaviglio, he's a pitch to contact guy. He's got the 11% K rate. That's terrible. And 11% of contact against him is, I'm misreading something here. He has high soft contact, is what I'm trying to say. So, low soft contact. Okay. I'm special sometimes. So, bottom line is low K rate, high contact rate, and high soft, contact. Oh my God, Sean.
Contact.
Can you punch me through the computer right now?
No, I can't do that, but we can get
through. Guys, we can do it. The bottom line is he can be hit hard. You can hit Sammy Gaviglio hard, okay? So that point has finally been made.
Yes. Woo.
All right, so listen. He works with a sinker. He offers a slider, a curve, a change as some secondary pitches, but he's primarily a sinker ball pitcher. So I was looking at the repertoire. I was looking at my buddy Derek Holland from today. He's basically a right-handed Derek Holland, but even worse.
We got a lot of Derek Holland comps on this slate, by the way.
We do.
Yeah.
So who do we like against him other than everybody? Well, let's be more selective here. The one guy that's pretty obvious and it really didn't think need you to dig deep is Josh Donaldson, but I will dig deep for you. He destroys almost all pitches and he really kills sinkers. He's over 2 standard deviations above the mean against the sinker. When looking at pitch FX data, which, you know, is going to go the way of the dinosaur soon with StatCast, but it's still worthy data. Kills that pitch. Smoke, Kendry, Tulo, all solid against the pitch as well. So we got a few guys who really kills sinkers. As for his slider, his curve, his change, Donaldson is fine against the former, but he kills the latter two. In other words, he's fine against sliders, but he destroys curves and changes. So Josh Donaldson destroys, and when I say destroys, I'm not saying that like, he's really good against it. Like I'm saying it because of, you know, quantitatively, like looking at the data, he literally destroys the sinker, the curve, and the change. 3 of his 4 pitches, Gaviglio's pitches. Tulowitzki and Bautista are really good against the curve and the change, but Bautista struggles a bit against sinkers, and Gaviglio, however, sucks. So we can kind of mitigate that situation. Joey can mitigate that situation a bit, given the fact that Gaviglio is not a good pitcher. So when we start this stack, we're obviously going to start it with Donaldson. We're going to follow it up with Tulowitzki, A, because of his performance against Gaviglio's repertoire, and B, because we like the shortstop in our stacks, you know. And then from the trio of Smoke, Kendry, and Bautista, we're going to go with Bautista and then pick one of Smoke and Kendry. Obviously, both are first base. Obviously, there's a price difference there. I don't have it right in front of me, but last I saw, Smoke was like $3,900 and Kendry was $3,200. So it's expensive, yes. Right. But remember, we've got some nice cheap pitchers on the slate that'll let us fit in a stack like this Toronto one or your Boston one, both of which are in amazing spots against some really vulnerable, targetable pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at Donaldson since he came back from the injury, and the numbers are just pretty staggering. 11 games since he came back from the injury, he's hit 5 home runs in those games. He's had 10 RBIs in those 11 games. He has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of those games have more than 10 fantasy points in them, and he's only gotten blanked in 1 of those 11 games. So, I mean, he came back from injury, and he's knocking the hell out of the ball, man. He really is. So, like, start with Donaldson and build around it, you know. And the Smoke Monster is always sexy, but that's one of the best parts about having just, you know, Smoke and Kendrys, because one of them is going to be lower owned, and you can play that ownership game, and you can play both of them, you know, multiple lineups with Toronto guys. So I love doing that, mixing and matching my Toronto bats.
Yeah. And I also was looking, and Russell Martin is just average against all those pitches, but that's just fine, you know, because when you have a guy like him or Pilar, you know, who are just average, you don't stand out against those pitches. But when the pitcher himself is below average, that vaults them up a bit. So, you know, you can always and you know, you can always look at Russell Martin and Kevin Pilar. They're both very good hitters. But the guys that we talked about, they really stand out and they're in a really, really good spot.
Yep. I love that call. All right, so moving on to the Grout, and actually, you know, kind of when I think about it, like, I feel like I should have moved Cleveland up into the high-priced over Boston, because I actually like them a little bit more in this spot. They're going up against Miguel Gonzalez in Guaranteed Rate Field, which is the dumbest name ever. I don't know why. They changed it from Comiskey Park, which is one of the greatest baseball stadium names ever, to U.S. Cellular, and we got used to the Cell. And I was living on the South Side when that whole transition went through, and people were like, "God, why can't they call it Comiskey?" And they're like, "Now you're gonna call it Guaranteed Rate." Ugh, God,
it's a mortgage company, and
I know,
and it's like, that's even for like a company, like a mortgage company, that's, it's kind of just like a boring name.
No, it's brutal.
It's anyway, like, that's like if we would have called Lineup Logic like Good Fantasy Lineup.
Good Fantasy Lineup Podcast.
Hey, guys, welcome to the Good Fantasy Lineup Podcast, where we advise you for fine fantasy baseball calls that do good things.
Do good things. Let's look at some of the positive plays. all right. Anyway. So Cleveland goes into Chicago. It's a great park to play in. And I like this spot against Miguel Gonzalez. He is like Derek Holland. This is another Derek Holland comp, but replace the 20% strikeout rate with a 13% strikeout rate. He's bad. Barrel FIP is way down there at 5.4. He's even worse against left-handers. And that's pretty much what Cleveland has been doing these days. Their lefties are smoking the ball, and they've got 4 of them. It's Kipnis and the one Lindor, excuse me, not Lindor, but Lindor is a switch hitter. I don't know if he's batting lefty. I don't know where he's taking his, you know, I don't know if he's switching actively or if he's just, you know, hitting batting righty or what. We got Lindor in the, Kipnis in the one, Brantley in the three. And then in the back half, you've got Chisenhall and Zimmer at 7 and 8 sometimes, or
well, they just started bumping up Zimmer to the six hole, which is awesome because the dude is crushing the ball.
They're both. So this is the thing. So I mean, I think if you want to look at 1 through 5, obviously it's Kipnis, Lindor, Brantley, and then E5 because he's reverse splits. Like, don't forget E5. E5 is reverse splits, guys. He mashes righties. Okay, this is a great spot for him. Although he has been out of the lineup a couple days, I don't know if he's injured or he's getting the fucking Nelson Cruz old man treatment. You know, I think those are your four primaries: Kipnis, Lindor, Brantley, and E5, and that's 1 through 4. And that's, you know, that's pretty straightforward. It's going to be spendy, but it's pretty easy. It's pretty straightforward.
Oh, I know why he was out. There was interleague play.
Oh, that's right. Okay, that makes total sense. That's right, because they were in Colorado. I forgot.
And
about
Santana
that.
Compared to Encarnacion is a better defender.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So I think, and speaking of Santana, like I looked into it because I was like, wow, didn't Santana cool off for a while? And he did. And he heated right back up. And in fact, in the last week, he actually leads the team in ISO. But in the last month, Chisenhall and Zimmer are actually leading the team ISO in against right-handed pitching. You know, it's a small sample size, but they both have WOBAs over 400 in basically what amounts to almost 40 plate appearances against righties. You know, we can't necessarily rely on ISO and WOBA to be that useful in those small sample size because they don't normalize very much and they kind of show. But what you see, I guess, from there even is, you know, you're not going to necessarily say, oh my God, they're amazing plays. What I think you can see is these guys are fucking hitting right-handed pitching. And Cleveland is really coming alive against righties. And this is a great opportunity for them. So you can go 1 through 4. You can go 4 through 6 and add, you know, E5, Santana, and then, you know, Zimmer. Or you can easily go down and do Santana, Zimmer, and Chisenhall. And that is kind of sexy to me because anytime you have a team that's going to attract attention, and Cleveland will attract attention in this situation, you know that, you know, a guy like Francisco Lindor is going to get a lot of ownership. You know, a guy in a leadoff spot like Jason Kipnis, and those guys are going to get a lot of ownership. Part of the way that you leverage that is you spread yourself out in between the lineups. So, you know, whether it's like a 3-5-7 stack or a 2-4-6-8 stack, something like that. And, you know, you get access to all the bats that you want in a unique way. And I think that that's something you may want to do with Cleveland.
Yeah, that's a great call. I love Cleveland against Miggy because, you know, I got to watch a lot of him in his Orioles days, and you know, he's not like, he's a professional pitcher, but he's a bulldog. Like, he attacks hitters, and the problem with him attacking hitters is he doesn't have dominating stuff and he can get destroyed, especially by teams like Cleveland that among, you know, the top barreling teams, I guess that would be the way we'd say it, barreling. The barrelers, they barrel like Donkey Kong, brah. Barrel like Donkey Kong.
Yeah, we'll have to ask Casey Bogislaw what the noun form or how you would name someone who barrels.
Barrel Arce in Spanish.
Barrel Arce. Is it reflexive?
I think so. I have to ask my Spanish teacher. I'll yeah.
Go back to your high school and ask
your Spanish. Just be like, can you tell me how to conjugate barrel arse?
High school, you could definitely ask a Spanish teacher.
That's a good point. I also, like 50% of my students speak Spanish, and my dad, you know, Fernandez, you know, he speaks Spanish too. So,
oh wow, you have a lot of resources. So we're gonna have guys. We're gonna have the Spanish version of what it means how to say to barrel.
To barrel. We'll get all back right, to you on that.
I love this call because your next call, I haven't been able to play this fucking team in months because they've been kind of rough. You know, and we had like the Cody Bellinger breakout and then they went ice cold for a little while, but I don't mind the Dodgers in this spot. Talk to me here, Fern.
Yeah, I don't ever play the Dodgers against righties. They are not good against righties, but against lefties, it's a different story. And they're getting Amir Garrett, who's not a good lefty. He had that amazing start against the Orioles back in April where he just K'd the shit out of them. But he's just really regressed to what he should be at, which is a young fireballer who he's like a baby deer. He's like a baby giraffe. He like has crazy stuff. He's got big, long legs like a baby giraffe, big, long neck, but he doesn't know how to use his body yet. Right. And he's going to figure it out at some point. But right now, like he is not there yet. Terrible xFIP, 5.23. That's really, really bad. The K rate is very blah. I wrote blah. It's not a number, but I think it's like 17%, which is not terrible, but it's not good. A bad walk rate, lots of homers, lots of hitters counts. He's an inefficient pitcher, which you expect from an inexperienced guy like him. Didn't play baseball until like late teens, I think 20s. Like he was a basketball player. Yeah, interesting story. Lots of hard contact. I digress, back to my point. Very, very targetable pitcher in this spot. And holy shit, Sean, the Dodgers are good against lefties. The following batters have OPSs over 900 against lefties this year.
This is the thing. Remember, we always loved the Dodgers lefties against righties. Seager, Bellinger, Yasmani Grandal. But they're actually flipping the script right now, and it's the righties that – or excuse me, it's the righties that are doing work. You know, Chris Taylor and Logan Forsythe, and Bellinger hits them both. So, sorry, keep talking.
No, well, I'm glad you said that because, you know, Bellinger and Seager are elite talents. But the problem is – you know, you get like a LA Angels situation against righties, you know, to use the Angels as an example, where it's like you can pitch around Mike Trout, you know, if nobody else can hit. And you can pitch around Bellinger and Seager, you know, more or less, if nobody else can hit righties. And they really can't hit righties that well. But against lefties, OPS is over 900. Chris Taylor, Logan Forsythe, Cody Bellinger, Enrique Hernandez, over 800, Austin Barnes, Corey Seager, and Brett Eibner, who is 798, close enough for me. But that is 1, 2, 3, 4 guys with elite OPSs, 6, 7, 8 guys, what is it, seven guys with very good OPSs. Yeah. Eibner, Bellinger, and Hernandez over 300 ISO. Forsythe and Taylor over 400 WOBA. Here's a crazy stat. Chris Taylor, soft contact versus left-handed pitching, 3%. That's nuts. He fucking destroys lefties. Like a 3% soft contact rate against lefties is like he doesn't fuck up against lefties.
Yeah. So wow.
The bottom line is this is a team that destroys lefties. And Garrett, he's a fastball slider change guy. He throws the four seamer a whopping 62% of the time. Like, this is a guy that's not long for a relief role. You can't be a starting pitcher throwing a 62% of the time four seamer. You just can't. Seager, right. Forsythe, Hernandez, Grandal, and Franklin Gutierrez all crush that pitch. Seager, Taylor, and Forsythe, they kill the slider. Forsythe and Seager crush the change. So you not only have a team that can destroy his handedness as a lefty, but you have guys that destroy lefties and destroy those particular pitches that he throws. So go ahead and stack everybody up. But the GOAT stack to me is Forsythe at third, Seager at short, Taylor at outfield. And then somebody else you like in there, maybe
Bellinger.
Yeah, right, right. Oh, I don't know, man. Like, if Brett Eibner's in there, I really like him because he's Mensal. Yeah. At outfield, Austin Barnes at borderline Mensal catcher. He's got to be 2-1, 2-2, maybe even 2. And or an expensive Bellinger who should go low owned. Like, not only does he have the West Coast bias, but there's also the misconception that it's the lefty lefty matchup. But Bellinger has been crushing lefties.
He has, yeah. 330 ISO on the season. Yeah,
I mean, and then you could do Enrique Hernandez, who's a lefty killer.
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge leverage spot because you have the combination of the fact that every time that people see Dodgers versus a lefty, they go, okay, moving on. You know, that's it. No one is paying attention to the fact that this team is, you know, against lefties in the last 30 days. I'm going to let you guess where their WRC plus ranks.
Oh my God. Against lefties in the last 30 days.
Yep.
It's gotta be top 5.
It's 7. Top 10.
Yeah.
It's 7. To lefties, 23% K rate, 8% walk rate with a team ISO of 224. Their BABIP is 293. Team WOBA 340 and the WRC plus of 115. Obviously, you know, listen, again, you can't draw like massive conclusions from 30-day sample size when you have a stat like WRC plus, okay? Because WRC plus it accounts for like a much larger sample size, and certain things get a lot more weighted. But you can, you know, you can look at is certain different pieces of data, and you know, a piece of data like that, you know, plus what you're seeing in some of these individual hitters and Vegas giving them a 5-run total here, in Dodger Stadium. I mean, it's not that often that you see the Dodgers with a 5-run total in Dodger Stadium. And that tells you a lot about how they're playing against lefties right now.
Yeah, definitely. And I really want to stress the whole West Coast, East Coast thing. Like, yep. the West Coast teams go underowned. It's just a fact.
Yeah, it is.
You know,
it's statistically proven year after year after year after year.
And not just in baseball, but in football too, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's just an edge that you can get. Now the thing that sucks is, but we're kind of enjoying this late swap thing, is if lineups don't get announced prior to lock, and you don't want lineups announced at like 7 o'clock, that's bullshit. But if lineups, you know, if lineups don't get announced until 6:30, 6:40 Eastern time, people start to sweat and they're like, fuck it, I'm not using the Dodgers, you know, but if you do use the Dodgers and it doesn't get announced, you know, and then like say Brett Eibner doesn't start, I mean, you can easily swap him out. You know, you just got to leave some money there to get into like Enrique Hernandez. But keep that in mind, guys. Like, I think the Dodgers are going to destroy.
Yeah. I think, by the way, we didn't talk about this team, and I want to take a quick second. Fern, do me a favor. I was just looking at some of this data on Zach Davies. While I talk about this New York Atlanta game, we need to talk about Arizona against Zach Davies in the desert, because I was looking at the totals and they got a 5-run total down there for a reason. You know, and this Milwaukee Arizona game is interesting. So
you want some pitch data?
Yeah, well, maybe the splits here. I mean, you know, Arizona against a righty is where you want to be, because they've been smashing righties recently. And Milwaukee in Chase Field, I mean, you know, they have a great park as it is, but you're getting Randall Delgado in Chase Field. Like, good gracious. I don't know how I overlooked this game. But I'm going to talk about a game that I really like, that I think is very stackable.
Can I just jump in really quickly? Cause kind of piqued my interest here. Zach Davies throws the two seam fastball 57% of the time.
Oh, God.
And it is three standard deviations below the mean. In other words, it's really, really bad. Like, his primary pitch is horrific. And then his change.
Explains why he only has a 16% strikeout rate.
Yeah. Yeah.
323 BABIP.
And then if you look at who on the Diamondbacks crushes two seamers, it is Paul Goldschmidt, Jake Lamb, and David Peralta.
Oh my God.
Goldie is three standard deviations above the mean against the two seamer. Lamb and Peralta are behind him, not too far. And then Owings, Descalso are right there as well. So,
oh my God.
Goldie, anybody?
Yeah, Paul Goldschmidt. Can I interest anyone in an Arizona stack? Yeah, you can. And I think the Arizona, they put up 15 fucking runs today. They're so good at home.
Dude, Chris Iannetta had 7 RBIs.
They're so good at home. Like, they just really are. Like, you don't need to play Arizona on the road. You just need to wait until they're at home and then play them in Chase Field because they just smack the ball around the ballpark. And they steal a ton of bases, and they run. And it's just they're a fun and easy team. We're going to have some Arizona exposure here. You know, and the nice thing is you get some cheap bats and mixed in there. You get a Gregor Blanco. You get a Chris Owings. You get Brandon Drury mixed in for cheap. And you know what? Anytime you can get a catcher in Chase Field, you punt catcher in Chase Field because it's one of the best ballparks. The other hitters are going to help create other plate appearances for those guys. So you take your punt catcher in Chase and just, you know, always. That's what I like to do personally. So, oh my gosh. And then Milwaukee side against Randall Delgado. I'm going to talk this. I want to talk about this New York Atlanta game because these two starters are brutal. Okay, we have the Mets going down to SunTrust Field, and this ballpark has been playing hot. It, you know, the data suggests that it's actually pretty neutral. It's better for lefties, but it's hot down there in Atlanta, and it's getting warmer. You know, it's been staying dry recently too. So we've got Matt Harvey versus Julio Teheran, who basically have been just the biggest letdowns in these rotations that there is. They're rough right now. Harvey owns a 5.4 barrel FIP and Teheran owns a 5.2 barrel FIP. They're both bottom 10 in the on the barrel FIP leaderboard bottom chart. Teheran actually walks more left-handed batters than he strikes out, and he gives up 2 full home runs per 9 and 37% hard contact and a 44% fly ball rate to lefties. What the fuck else do the Mets have? They only have lefties. I mean, it's so easy. Like, you just take the lefty power bats from New York and you throw them in there against Teheran, and it's going to be a really, really bad day. I mean, it's like we watched last Friday, guys. You remember Gerrit Cole started against the Mets, and Gerrit Cole has been absolutely brutal against lefties, and the fucking Mets hit 3 homers against him. You know, it's Conforto, it's Bruce, it's Cabrera, it's Duda, it's Walker. Boom. 5 of them. You take any of them that you can fit. Conforto has cooled off a little bit. I got to be honest with you. I'm not rushing to roster Michael Conforto. But I will roster Lucas Duda in a hurry. And, Asdrubal Cabrera just continues to be cheap and he's at shortstop and I hate shortstop. So I will take Asdrubal Cabrera I will probably have Asdrubal Cabrera one-offs everywhere. I love the Mets stack. The opposite side though is just as appealing because Matt Harvey is basically the exact same fucking pitcher. He only strikes out 2% of left-handed batters more, so it's a 15% strikeout rate to a 13% walk rate. Same thing with hard contact, 34% to left-handed bats, a 41% fly ball rate. I mean, he is slightly better than Julio Teheran. Not really. The thing is righties are hitting him too. Like, so he, you know, he's an equal opportunity offender here. And you know, the Braves continue to have these spots where they get, you know, they put up some runs. They did it in that Cincinnati series last weekend. They did it in this game on Wednesday night, who started that game, Fern? In that Atlanta game where Atlanta put up 14 runs.
It wasn't Fulton Evich. No.
No, Foltynewicz started
Jairo Garcia?
No, I forget who it was. Folty pitched a shutout.
Yeah, he dominated.
Was impressive.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think, you know, okay, fine. It's the classic guys. Inciarte is one of the best leadoff batters in baseball right now. You know, he's like a plus Dexter Fowler. He just gets on base and he hits the ball pretty hard, line drives everywhere. So Inciarte and Markakis woke up a little bit today. He had an RBI single, so that was good to see. He is cheap. So 1-3-5, you know, Inciarte, Markakis, Adams, you know. And I think, you know, what I was looking at, Fern, is, and I'm going to have to dive into this a little bit deeper, is just the comparison between Matt Adams and Lucas Duda, because you have two guys who are similar, you know, very, very similar prices and the same position. You know, my question is if we're debating between the two of them, you know, who would we prefer? And Matt Adams right now owns a 352 WOBA total, a 118 WRC plus on the year, 28% K rate, 252 ISO, you know, 338 BABIP, which is all really, really, really great. But, you know, I can't imagine that Lucas Duda is far behind him. In fact, let me look that up real quick.
Well, I just looked up, as you've been talking, I've been looking at all the repertoires for both pitchers and what the guys do against them.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this.
And both of them are primary fastball slider pitchers, and they both offer changeups. Lucas Duda is an outstanding play against that type of pitcher. Matt Adams is fine, but he really struggles against the slider. Not terrible, but he struggles. The guys that stand out for me on the Mets, I mean, it's definitely Duda, but on the Braves, I really like Tyler Flowers.
Oh, yeah.
And because he crushes fastballs and sliders. And then Matt Kemp is in a nice spot as far as fastballs go, but he gets beat by sliders. But Flowers has no weaknesses against Harvey's repertoire, and we love to find catchers in nice spots. And as everybody knows, Flowers is not cheap, but he's not expensive. Like, he's typically like in the high 2K range. Mm-hmm. So Flowers is in a really nice spot.
Yeah. I like that call. And here's the other thing about Flowers is he's similar to a guy, and I'm looking at his data right now, two-hit game. He has a double, an RBI double, and a single tonight. So he continues to be rock solid. He bats in the six hole, like JT Realmuto. Like, solid batted ball data. He has a really low walk, or excuse me, a really low K rate, a nice walk rate at 10%. Yeah, man, I'm just looking. He's not a power guy, but like, he is just an OBP hit for average BABIP machine, like a 430 fucking BABIP this year, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. just smacking the ball into the gap.
Yeah, definitely.
I like that call.
He's awesome. Yeah.
Anything on the Mets? You seeing anything besides Lucas Duda?
Yeah. So, I mean, Conforto, like, he is, let me get it back up here. yeah. Conforto against the fastball. I mean, he's really good against a two seamer, but, Teheran is primarily a four seam pitcher. Okay. But he's still good. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, he's right. He's second on the team in ability against the four-seamer to Duda. But he's up there with Granderson and Cabrera against a two-seamer, which Teheran does offer. So Conforto, Granderson, and Cabrera against the secondary pitch. But Duda against Teheran's primary pitch, and then again, just to reiterate, against the slider, leading the way is Conforto, and then Juan Lagares is pretty damn good against that pitch as well. So yeah, all the typical lefties I think are in play. not that. Just because of the handedness, but against the repertoire too.
Yeah, I like that call. All right, you have an interesting spot here for us. The Buccos here.
Yeah, I'm going to put a bow on this this podcast here, and then we'll jump into the lineup. And I think this is an interesting spot for the Buccos. It's against Vance Worley. And Vance Worley, just like several of the pitchers we've been talking about tonight, Sean, these are guys, Miguel Gonzalez, Sam Gaviglio, you know, and even Jordan Zimmermann, you know, he's starting to become this kind of pitcher where they're just trying to pitch to contact and, you know, get lucky with, you know, guys making weak contact and getting innings for their team, you know, being a good soldier for their team. And that's what Vance Worley is. He's a good soldier. You know, he throws first pitch strikes. That's his job. He's a journeyman, swingman, you know, sometimes starter, sometimes minor leaguer, sometimes not. You know, his job is to come in, give his team those innings, limit them hopefully to 3 or 4 runs, but more like 5 runs, you know, given his ability. Keep the bullpen from having to work more than a few innings. You know, other than not hitting a bunch of homers, the Pirates have been a surprisingly potent offense as of late. And so when you look at runs per plate appearance, WRC+, WOBA, hard contact, OPS, they're in the top 10 in all of those. They don't strike out a lot. They're just outside of the top 10 there, but by no means are they like a risky K team, you know, K gets a bunch of times against, you know, weak pitchers like Worley. So stacking the Pirates means that you're just looking for like death by doubles. You know, you could walk into a dinger or two, but odds are you're going to get your value from lots of runs. And that means you have to pick the right guys, because the solo shot isn't going to save your ass, you know, that oh, thank God, that solo shot, I got 19 points. So who do we pick? Worley gives us a fastball about 80% of the time. That's what he does. He just throws fastballs, changing between the four-seam, the two-seam, and the cutter. He uses the four-seam 40% of the time. So starting there, Josh Bell and Gregory Polanco kill that pitch. They struggle against the four-seam, but luckily for us, he throws that about half as often as the two-seamer. So saving them, though, is the fact that they both excel at Worley's secondary pitches, Polanco against the cutter and Bell against the slider. So Polanco and Bell are really nice plays. John Jaso could be really sneaky if you're in a large-scale GPP. He kills fastballs. Adam Frazier and Jose Osuna are interesting, too. The problem with the Pirates, though, right now, it's really, really irritating, is because Bell, Jaso, and Osuna all get regular playing time, and they're all first baseman eligible on FanDuel, which is a pain in the ass.
Right.
Honestly, there's going to be some luck involved. But if I'm picking one, it's going to be Bell. You know, no one really stands out as a dominant force, but given the fact that Worley sucks, these guys are all fine plays. I mean, and then as far as McCutchen, Harrison, and Freeze go, they're all really weak against the two-seam fastball, which is, again, Worley's 40% of the time pitch. So am I saying don't use them because they're weak against that pitch? No, not at all. I mean, they're all good major league hitters. But you want to make them, if you're mini stacking, don't use them. I'm not going to use them. I would use Bell and Polanco. But if I'm full stacking, you know, for whatever reason, you know, maybe I'm multi entering a bunch of times. I definitely throw them in there.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. You know, the Pirates, it's nothing sexy there, but they, you know, we were talking about it tonight. They can like put up 10 runs or nothing. And they got blanked tonight in Miami, but that doesn't mean that it's going to happen all the time.
Like, yeah. But your boy Edison Volquez is pitching like, you know, Cy Young right now.
Possessed, dude. Unbelievable. All right, dude, FanDuel time. Let's get over here. Let's see if we can throw together a quick lineup. I mean, the hard part is that we're going to have to, you know, decide basically what are these like cheap pitchers we want. So I almost feel like, you know, we should like kind of go, you know.
You know what? Let's just say this. You fuckers can make your Corey Kluber lineup yourselves, okay? Sean and I are going full YOLO style.
Full YOLO.
Full stack on YOLO. And
stack the bets.
Yeah. So who do you want to YOLO it with? That's the
I don't question. Know. Let's start with bats, and then we'll figure out the arm, because we know how many arms we have out there. All right. So, you know, what do we think? 3-2-2?
Yeah, let's do 3-2-2. That's a good call.
All right. 3-2-2. Do you want to go Toronto?
I feel like we should. I feel like Toronto is the dominant stack of the night.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
So we're obviously going with Donaldson.
Joshy.
Obviously going with the Joshter.
Yeah. And then I think you almost have to take Kendrys Morales at 3K just because of the savings.
And then Smoke going up to 4K, it's like a smoke signal. No. I didn't even mean to say that. I meant to say smoke signal, but wow. I think Tulowitzki too.
Fair enough. Okay, fair enough. Tulowitzki.
So Morales, Donaldson, Tulo. I like that.
Yep. That's like what? Probably 3-4-6.
Well, Donaldson always bats in the two hole, and then Morales will probably bat like fourth or fifth, and Tulo sixth or seventh.
Right.
But that's fine.
Yeah. All right. Second base immediately pops to me is my boy, Jason Kipnis. 3,200, actually. That's a very good price for Kipnis, considering how hot he was just a little bit ago.
Holy shit. That's a really good price.
Yeah, it's a great price for Kipnis.
Wow, against Miguel Gonzalez too,
right? And lead.
So,
off,
who's
right?
Your other Cleveland bat you like?
Well, you got to go to the outfield, so you immediately are going to probably look for Brantley, because Brantley we know is in the outfield. $3,500. That's really not that bad of a price.
Damn, dude! Wow,
you know
he was just like $4,200. Oh, they were in Coors, but
all right, The last, I mean, if you want to know, do we want another Cleveland? No, we have our pair right there.
And you said 3-2-2. I think we meant 3-3-2. So do you want to do 3 with Cleveland or 3 with another team? I think 3 with Cleveland would make sense. We're obviously going to go outfield because we're not using Yan Gomes.
Yeah, exactly. We can go Chisenhall or Zimmer. And they're both 3K, and you just pick the one who's higher in the lineup probably.
Yeah, so just stick either one of them in there and call it a day.
Great. All right. And now
go ahead and put that in there.
You got to pair your outfielder with your catcher, which means you're going to need an outfielder. You know, you're going to want a catcher who's in towards the middle of the lineup.
And let me just say real quick about Chisenhall and Zimmer. I guarantee you Zimmer is going to be significantly higher owned, just because people are getting hip to him and he's a top prospect, and
Chisenhall
is like somewhat of a forgotten guy. So if you're playing ownership, Chisenhall is definitely going to be lower owned. But yeah, what you were saying.
Well, I'm thinking about an outfielder and a catcher pair. And strangely enough, my mind is kind of going towards Chase Field here.
Yeah. Well, I have two thoughts in mind. Both of them involve cheapo catchers. You're going to get hold on a second. I'm just getting my situation straight here. You're going to get guaranteed Chris Herman or Jeff Mathis super cheap. I mean, Iannetta is probably going to be a little bit higher.
Iannetta is 26, and Chris Herman is dealing with a hand injury.
Oh, right.
Mathis is $2,000.
So we need Iannetta to start, and he probably will because he had that huge game today.
Right.
So you could go Iannetta, but honestly, man, like my thought was I like Austin Barnes in L.A.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he's Min Sal, and I don't know.
Grandal
sucks here? Against lefties.
Oh.
But I could see Grandal starting. Like, I could see that happening, you know? But if Barnes is in the lineup, you lock in Barnes, and then you go to outfield and you go either Bellinger or Taylor. So if you go Bellinger, you got 9,500 left over.
Dude, Taylor, though, Taylor against the lefty. Taylor against the lefty all day.
Yeah. So Taylor against the lefty, and then you can and then let me see. Oh man, we need $400 for Kluber.
Oh my God. That's deeply, deeply tilting.
God, because I love that lineup.
I know, I do too.
Oh my God. Shit. Okay, so you get rid of Brantley and you just go Zimmer and what's his face? Chisenhall. That's ballsy.
That's a good
call. I don't think it's that ballsy. I mean, you're getting the Cleveland.
That works.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they could be 5-6. I mean, you have a leadoff batter. You always take leadoff batters no matter what.
Look at that. That's interesting. So we got the full Cleveland stack.
Yeah, that is pretty interesting. You're going all the way through that lineup.
I'm saving the shit out of that lineup.
Yep.
Yeah, screenshot really that, baby.
There's a lot of power in that lineup, and there is leverage in that lineup, too. Chris Taylor is a really nice leverage. I think the other one that I was thinking about, Fern, is possibly if you wanted to go back to Brantley, and this is interesting, okay? So you go back to Brantley and, you know, you go to Iannetta and Iannetta and Peralta. Because, isn't Yasmani Tomas is hurt, but Peralta is in there.
Yeah.
That gives you 9K for a pitcher. Now, if you don't want to spend 9K, if you want to spend 8K on a pitcher, then here's what I'm doing. I'm upgrading my I'm upgrading from Kendrys Morales to Justin Smoke. And I'm pitching I'm maybe even going up to Goldschmidt, and I'm just going with the 2-man Toronto, 3-man Cleveland, 3-man Arizona.
Yeah, so let's go. So let's see here. So you go Goldie. What the fuck happened?
Goldie, and then you have 7,500 for your pitcher, which is Michael Walker.
Yeah.
Wait, fucking, are you kidding me? How did we miss that Matt Moore is pitching?
Oh, shit.
Oh my God, you guys stack Minnesota.
Minnesota, you got Robbie Grossman. He's good. I think Sano's same split guy.
Michael Snow.
But Robbie Grossman shits on lefties, and so does Brian Dozier.
Yeah, that's pretty straightforward. Although it's a massive park downgrade. Although they've been playing in Safeco, but they're not playing particularly well right now. All right, guys, that is it. That is it, Fern. We've been at this long enough, my friend.
Yes.
Guys, if you want to understand how to attack the pitch data, the pitch FX data, follow Josh Fernandez on Twitter. He will tweet out these 6-8 war sentence tweet chains where he explains exactly what he's seeing in his daily musings. It is worth a follow. Josh Fern on Twitter. You, of course, can get access to the full suite of Lineup Logic goodies at patreon.com/lineuplogic. Fern, it was a pleasure, my friend. The Houston Bats came alive, by the way.
They did. A little bit of work. They did, Sean. I'm happy with that. I'm hitting my quins right now. So I'm feeling like a happy boy. And, we can rejoice in that, my friend.
Yep. Rejoice and be glad. I am just literally knocking on the door with everything.
You'll get there, dude. You'll get there.
Deeply, deeply tilting.
Yeah.
But that's kind of been this week, man. It's just been like right there.
I hear you, dude. I hear you.
But anyway, all right, guys, that is it for us. Good luck in your contests. Enjoy the weekend, and we will see you on Monday.
See y'all. Take care.